I had to go to the emergency room once from a hot pocket.
Did you really?
Yeah, like back in like 2007, 2008, something like that.
Well, what happened?
The same thing, but it just got, it got really bad. My lips swelled up and it was like pussing and everything.
Oh man.
Yeah, I should go to the doctor for this, because that emergency room visit gave me a steroid and it was fine. Like, in,
man, be careful, man. Jeez.
Yeah, they're hot. They're hot pockets. They're hot. They're supposed to be hot.
You shouldn't be eating hot pockets in the first place.
They're delicious.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. You rolling?
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, so you got all that?
Yeah, we'll throw that in there. If you want, I can take it.
Yeah, throw it in there somewhere. Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of I Could Talk Kayfabe. And that's what we do here. We talk kayfabe. I'm Joe.
And I'm Sean.
And I just watched, what was that, the Universal Championship Wrestling Championship? What? I don't even
Universal Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
From, I think it was 1984.
Oh, is that early?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It's like 84.
I thought I was watching the 90s, but no. It was just like Alabama, and they were just backwards.
No, I think it was Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee.
I think it's Tennessee, yeah, because
oh, wow.
It's George Gulas.
Yeah, that was So they had this guy named Peaches. Let's go right into it. And,
so I referenced him. I referenced this a few times. But.
And he wrestled in jeans and a t-shirt that said number one dad. Like one of those airbrushed shirts that you get at the mall.
Yeah.
That said number one dad.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
That was his wrestling gear.
And the announcer, George St. John, referred to him as a new black mat wrestler.
Technically the only black mat wrestler that was on this promotion.
Yeah, but we only watched like a half hour clip of it. We don't know.
I think that was the only clip they ever did.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. If anybody else, if whoever that guy was has more access to that, I would, or if anybody on the internet has access to it, I'd like to see what happened to Peaches,
yeah.
The new black mat wrestler.
And what I noticed about the promotion was, so they filmed it in a TV studio, which was common back then. A lot of promotions were filmed in TV studios. But like the tape library was like on the back of one of the walls. Like you could see like the 1-inch master tapes for all their broadcasts.
Well, what I think, here's what my theory is that the studio was actually just two walls.
Yeah.
And, or just a wall in like, it was a wall that was put up against somewhere going perpendicular to some other stuff on the opposite wall, like a curtain, because like this big black curtain. These curtains or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that was in like a garage or something. Like it was in a part of, it felt like it was in a part of a warehouse.
Yeah.
That they just cornered off. And that's what they used as the space where they wrestled.
Yeah.
They put a ring in there. They put some seats in there and they put a sign up. And then you had some wrestling.
Yeah. And in the one match, we missed the finish because they were showing an interview while the finish happened.
Why would you? That's the one thing I hate more than I really hate about wrestling in some respects is that when you miss the finish and you don't show it after. Cause I want to know what people, especially in promotions like this, because I want to know what people in these wrestling promotions are using to defeat their opponents.
Yeah, we'll never know because they were showing the interview and then they cut back to the ring as the guy was pinning the guy for the win.
You said he was and for something. It looked like it was a fucked up move because the guy was laying on his side.
Maybe it was better we didn't see it because maybe we missed a really bad botch.
Maybe. I don't know. I know in the Peaches match, the Peaches took on the Spoiler.
Yeah.
So imagine the Peaches is basically like the guy from the movie The Blind Side. Like he's like a big black dude, you know,
yeah.
giant dude, and he wrestles like a minute match.
Yeah, and the Spoiler is like this guy is like 5'6" and he's wearing like a generic wrestling mask.
Actually, with nothing on it.
I think it was just straight color, like nothing, just holes cut out where the eyes. So he was probably one of these guys. He's probably like multiple different wrestlers on the same show. So like one match he wrestles in a mask, and the next match he wrestles without a mask. So
yeah,
yeah.
And he beats Peaches beat him with what could be best described as. It's a move that's in the WWE games where you pick the guy up like, you know, kind of like you're gonna throw him over like a backdrop, but you have him rest on your shoulder for a minute and then you throw him over.
Yeah,
that's what he uses, and it's quite awkward.
Then he sits on his shoulders and pulls the guy's legs over his head and pins him
with his number one dad shirt.
Yeah,
and then the next match is a guy. It's
The bounty hunter.
The bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And he's against some Bruiser something.
Bruiser Bart or something
Bruiser,
like that.
Bruiser. Bruiser.
Bart Bruiser. I don't remember.
Bart
but,
Simpson.
Yeah. And then he was attacking him after the match, and Peaches came out for the save in a new shirt. He had a different shirt on.
Yeah.
It was a button-down shirt that he had unbuttoned, and then he took the shirt off.
Yeah. And he went to town.
Yeah.
He meant business.
Yeah.
The bounty hunter beat in one of his match with... a very ginger knee drop from the top
rope. Oh, yeah, a knee drop from the top rope, and then he gave him a little elbow before he pinned him.
Because well, the knee drop looked so bad, because the knee drop basically looked like he just he laid his shin across the guy's chest.
The guy was, like, laying on the mat so close to the corner, though, like, he had no room to really jump out, so he just kind of had to fall on him.
That's true. Yeah, so maybe it's not his fault. Yeah. But, yeah, and so that, and then they brawled, and then he was like, I want respect, and then... And then we get a segment where the guy talks, the Michael St. John or Jill St. John or whatever. He talks to the audience.
Yeah.
Talks to the audience, which you don't see that enough in wrestling these days. I think the NWA used to do that a lot.
Yeah. And there was a guy with a cowboy hat, and he needed more rules to be enforced. He was not having it.
Yeah.
Too many guys were getting away with stuff, and he didn't like what he saw.
He didn't like the neck stomping.
Yeah, the neck stomping.
You single out the neck stomping and the guys getting thrown over the top rope, which if you're going by NWA rules, yes, that is illegal.
Yeah.
But neck stomping, I mean, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. What if the guy's finisher's a neck stomp?
Yeah. What if Rugged Ronnie Garvin is doing his thing in there? But that guy would have rioted.
Yeah.
That guy would have ran to the ring and would have.
Did Garvin ever stomp on anyone's neck?
Yeah, he did. I think
it was like the head, both shoulders, midsection, legs. I don't know. Maybe the neck. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. That's a good question. And I know Randy Orton does a very lazy version of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to go back and watch my my Garvin squashes and see my WWF ones. Because for some reason, he was not good enough to just do the hands of steel, hands of stone in the WWF. I mean, I think he did use like a pile driver for here and there. Or no, it was Scorpion Deathlock.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. The hammer jammer.
Yeah, that Greg Valentine feud. He'd use that.
That's right. Can't forget about the hammer jammer.
Yeah.
But, I wanted you to see that. I'm glad you took the time to watch it.
Yeah, that was interesting. I wish there was more of it. I couldn't find any more on YouTube. I could have looked a little further, but I just we wanted to get right to this podcast. So
I think next time I'm gonna have to find some of those Polynesian ones that I was watching.
Yeah,
there's some stuff in there that's weird.
I want to see the Barbarian versus the Warlord.
Oh yeah, that's right.
If that ever happened in Polynesia or wherever,
Polynesia or Central States.
Well, that's where I want to see it. I want to see Barbarian versus Warlord. If anyone has footage of that, please let me know.
Okay, so you know what? Let's take our break. We'll come back and we'll talk about Sports Review Wrestling from December 1988. I'm going to dip into the SRW, which is not Southpaw Regional Wrestling.
But, no, it's Sports Review Wrestling.
Sports Review Wrestling coming up.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? Bad. I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
We are back. And Sports Review Wrestling from what month? And year?
December 1988.
December 88. So it's we got the Road Warriors on the cover.
Yeah, this is a very brown book.
Brown. It's very brown.
Very tan.
Yeah.
It's brown and yellow and like with some red.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the borders and stuff are brown. But also like the picture of the Road Warriors, like the background is also brown.
So they probably like got the picture of the Road Warriors and like, we're going to match the magazine to the background of the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
And it probably would have looked better with a different color.
It would,
in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you got a good studio shot of the Road Warriors.
You do. It's a great shot. Good promo photo.
The Road Warriors, can the horsemen survive their wrath?
It's like Hawk is like sitting on something because you can see
he's sitting on a chair.
Yeah, it's like a chair.
This is actually a great photo because so you have Hawk sitting on a chair and Animal behind him grimacing.
Yeah.
But Hawk is just kind of sitting there like, Like, yeah. He's got a very pensive look on his face.
Yeah.
Or very, like, it's just not, like, you know, threatening at all.
Yeah. Well, how can you be threatening if you're sitting in a chair?
Yeah, no, he's sitting in a steel chair.
Yeah.
And your buddy's behind you going, argh! So, yeah, so that's the road.
It's like, it looks like they had just put their makeup on, and an Animal's like, let me look in your mirror. You got better light. And that's kind of, like, what it looks like. And then somebody took a picture. No.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, move over for a second. I want to take. You know what? I want to take a picture of this. I'm gonna have to take a picture of this. I like that. That's good. So let's see other stories on the side here. Buddy Roberts' vow to Michael Hayes: Samoans will annihilate traitors. SWAT is what that's an acronym could be. This could be an acronym for that because it's the Samoan SWAT team.
Yeah.
Sports review editor is referee for a night.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny article.
Quote, it's not as easy as it looks.
It sure isn't.
Sports Review's Election Day Spectacular.
Oh.
What 10 wrestlers would do if they were president.
Yeah. Michael Dukakis.
Yeah.
That was the Bush Dukakis election.
Shout out to Dukakis.
Yeah, Michael Dukakis.
And then it's kind of cut off in my article here, but
yeah.
Well, what?
No, he's still alive.
Is he still alive?
Michael Dukakis? Yeah.
And H is still alive too.
Yeah,
just barely.
Barely hanging. I think we just jinxed
H them. And Barbara are still alive.
We just jinxed both of them.
Oh shit. We jinxed everybody. And then the one that I couldn't read on the cover because it's partially cut off. Crumbling from the Foundation, the Collapse of Jimmy Hart's Empire.
Yeah. Yeah, they go in. Well, we'll talk about it when we get there, but they go into, you know.
And at the very top, we have Andre the Giant. He's ready to turn good again.
They're a little off.
A little bit off, but I'll be honest, the article actually makes a good case for it.
Yeah, it does. It does make a good case for it.
Also, something I just noticed here. So I didn't remember this, but Hogan did have a pair of trunks for the Mega Powers.
Yeah.
That did say Mega Powers
on
the back.
Yeah.
Usually it's nothing on the back.
No, they had the Mega Powers trunks, him and Savage.
Well, Savage always had something on the back of his, you know, but Hogan had a graphicated trunk at one point. That's a rare variation. Hulk Hogan, as we've talked about on the show many a time, Hulk Hogan trunk variations are kind of our thing.
Yeah.
So let's jump into this here. Also, the pages are very brown too.
They sure are. Very this is a yellowed magazine.
Yellowed as fuck.
Yeah.
Just how we like it. So what do we got here? So
it's got character. That's what it is.
It does have character.
So you got the mailbag.
Yeah, we'll just kind of go through the pages here. But mailbag, you got some photos here of somebody here. Actually, this is a good photo here, or letter here about it. Just says, "Dear Vince," mm-hmm. I'm going to read this here because this guy goes in. He says, "This is just a quick note to Vince McMahon. I would like to know, Vince, how you can televise men being nearly decapitated." Nearly decapitated by demolition outside the ring. Not inside the ring, because they do the same move inside the ring, but outside the ring. How can you show 7-time world champion Harley Race almost kill himself? I think he's referring to Harley Race's abdomen injury-inducing dive through a table that put him, that if you remember, that put him out of commission, and they had that thing on, like, you know, on TV where, like, Harley Race's head was in the clouds.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he came back to reclaim his crown against Haku, and he lost.
Yeah.
How can you show Adrian Adonis in a dress? Yet not show the segment where Brutus Beefcake's head was ripped open with Ron Bass's spur. Because if you remember, they put the giant X while that was happening.
I do. Well, the thing is, Beefcake was bleeding.
He was, but people bled all the time. I mean, shit, yeah. Hogan was bleeding during the WrestleMania 5 match, and, you know, everybody's bleeding.
Yeah.
Everybody's bleeding. Maybe you just thought it was too gruesome. Well, it wasn't half as gruesome as watching the Andre the Giant wrestle or watching Billy Graham get ripped apart. I don't know if I remember that. Maybe they're just talking about the beatdown he got that took him off TV.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe if it had been Bass being cut up, or if your favorite Beefcake didn't make so much for your federation, you would have aired the segment uncensored. So he really thinks that Hulk Hogan, that Beefcake is that high up?
He was.
I guess he was.
He was in line for the IC title shot.
Or just the IC title in general, which, to be perfectly honest, he should have had. He should have had a singles run of something, at least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in hindsight, I think they were correct in not giving him the title. But, both times he was in line for a title shot, he was injured. Once at the hands of Ron Bass, that was the kayfabe injury. And then the next time he was going to face Mr. Perfect, and then B. Brian Blair in a parasail had something to do with that.
Yeah, this is from Chris Salinas in Milwaukee. Chris Salinas, also related to Salinas from TNA.
Yes, rest in peace, Chris Salinas.
You just jinxed him, too.
Then you got a cool picture of the Freebirds.
Cool picture of the Freebirds doing Bad Street.
Yeah.
And then you have a picture of Hawk drop-kicking Ivan Koloff, and somebody's like, man, Hawk's got a great drop-kick. I just wanted to write a letter about that. Back in the day, that's what you did. You wrote letters to wrestling magazines. You were like, you know who's got a good clothesline? Jim Neidhart.
I saw him beat Johnny Puma with it. Brawl.
He put him down for the 3 count, and I was like, man, that's an unused move. He doesn't really do it much, but he should do it more often. You know, we need more clotheslines. Anyways, one of my favorite things in this Sports Review Wrestling series is the top wrestlers' answers. The top wrestlers answer your question of the month.
Yeah.
And it's always something different.
I'm so curious as to Phil Hickerson, what he had to say.
Top wrestler, Phil Hickerson. The question of the month being, if your most hated enemy changed his ways, would you befriend him?
Oh, okay.
From Carly Gill in Anchorage, Alaska. And you just get a bunch of people having comments on this. It's really, you know, a lot of them are just like, why would I do that? Like, Stan Lane's in here. He's like, why would I do that? I'm like a tag team specialist. Everybody hates me and Bobby, you know, especially for the champions.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Garvin, rightfully so, is like, why would I be friends with Kevin Sullivan? You know, he's crazy, you know, and he's harassing my wife. Yeah. So, you just get a lot of in-character, a lot of great kayfabe answers here.
Yeah. Road Warrior Hawk talking about the Horsemen, and Von Erich talking about Kerry Von Erich. He's talking about Iceman King Parsons in his answer.
Actually, my favorite here is Soldats Ustinov, former AWA Tag Team Champion. Jerry Lawler, I don't think I could make, how you say, friends with that cow of a man.
Oh, he is a fat cow of a man.
I am a wrestler in the great Soviet tradition of bravery and courage. He is a pig dog coward.
Sure was.
Pig dog coward, Jerry Lawler. That's a good one. I like that one. I'm going to keep that one around.
Who did Brick House Brown have a feud with?
Jeff Jarrett? Robert Fuller?
I know this
was... He's just talking about Robert Fuller.
I know this would sound phony, but I know I would make amends with my enemy. Wow. That's mighty big of you, Brick House Brown.
Mighty big of you. I just want to finish this sold out and release off one here. He says, he's a pig dog coward. I spit on his country.
Oh.
I spit on his fancy house, and I spit on his wife. In fact, I would like to spit on everything he touches.
Oh, jeez. That's pretty hard.
I would like that to be a sketch of some sort where just Soldat Ustinov, just Jerry Lawler goes to goes into like a bank and he touches like thing, he touches the door.
Would you buy this if it were on a t-shirt? Because now that I have a merch store on Amazon where you could buy I Can Talk Kayfabe t-shirts on.
Oh, what a bombshell.
Maybe the next t-shirt I'll make is a Soldat Ustinov with this quote underneath.
That's a long quote though.
It would be.
That's like a Star Wars scroll.
And I also don't have the rights to use his image, so I don't. It would be cool, though.
It was cool.
There would be some emails I'd have to send to try to get his permission to use his image. And I'd probably have to get permission from Pro Wrestling Illustrated to use the image, because I don't know. There's a lot of logistics I'd have to go through. It's not worth it.
So I know, he just brought up a whole can of worms. Because first of all, you got to find Soldat Ustinov, who I believe is still alive. You probably have to contact Boris Zhukov first.
Yeah.
Because Boris Zhukov probably has his number.
Here's the thought, what I'll do. I'll just take a picture of that and post it on Instagram.
Yeah, there you go.
That's about as good as it's going to get.
All right. So you were reading this.
Oh, my God.
I was not surprised by this because I've seen this many a time.
Yeah, I must have seen it, but I just never thought anything of it. So there's a videotape advertisement from Japan. One of the tapes is called...
This is the PWI TV Sports sponsored one, too.
So, and one of the tapes is called Riot of the Rising Sun, which is... that's a good title. It's all Japanese women's pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And then the other one, however... Mad Women Ready to Kill Slant-Eyed Slaughter is the name of the tape. Slant-Eyed Slaughter. Yeah.
It did not, when I read this, when I would see this ad when I was a kid, I didn't think anything of it. And now I realize how awful that is.
It's pretty awful. That might be the worst title of any wrestling tape I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, no, that would not fly today.
It shouldn't have flown in 88.
No, it shouldn't have, but it definitely would not fly today.
Wow.
This would get people's job. Somebody would lose their job over this.
Wrestler of the Month, the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, so this is right after SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So he won the title. And everybody is very excited for...
Everyone's all about the Warrior.
Everybody's all about the Warrior. In hindsight, saying like, "Oh, how come Beefcake didn't get the title?" If that was the case, if he did get the title, then the Warrior doesn't get the title.
Yeah.
And then who? Not that. I mean, you just don't have the Warrior. You probably don't have him to the degree that you would now. So yeah, that's...
I think in both situations where Beefcake was replaced, the correct man got the title. Not saying that Kerry Von Erich's title reign was all that long, but I feel like putting it on him.
But you don't think... Wait, so you don't think that he would have made a... He could have been... had he not got hurt, that Beefcake would have made a good IC champ in late 90?
I think his title reign would have been just as good as Kerry Von Erich's. Wasn't very good.
Well, Kerry Von Erich was like practically just out of his mind.
Yeah.
The whole time he was there.
But it got Kerry Von Erich over as a player, like for WWF fans.
Yeah.
Whereas Beefcake was already a player. So it was like, did he really need the belt? Kerry Von Erich, I think, needed the belt just to, be over with the fans.
Would you say that Beefcake was the Dolph Ziggler of his day?
No, I would. That's like, I would say he was more... I don't know about Dolph Ziggler. I think that's putting him too high up the card. I don't know. I wanted to say like he's like the R-Truth of his day, but I think he was above R-Truth.
He's definitely above R-Truth.
But I don't think he's as high as Dolph Ziggler.
Hmm.
What's a good spot? Maybe Mark Henry's a little above him.
Yeah, Mark Henry had a quality run at one point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm trying to think, actually. I'm going to think about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that.
Because you can't put titles in the equation because titles were just there. Nowadays, they're more common to just be on everybody.
Well, you're trying to think of somebody that, was hugely over, but was never really achieved anything. Never really achieved anything, like, statistically, I guess you would say. I mean, kind of like Jake Roberts, basically.
Yeah.
Jake Roberts never held a title in the WWE, but he was over as fuck.
Yeah. Same with Brutus Beefcake. Now, Beefcake's a former tag champ, so it's not like he never had, but that was before he became the Barber.
Right, I'm saying we're talking Barber.
Yeah.
It was because, pre-87 Beefcake, this is kind of a different situation. Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to ponder. If you're on our Facebook page and you want to interject in this, please do. I could talk kayfabe. I think it's just facebook.com/ I could talk kayfabe.
Yeah. And chances are, if you're listening to this, you already like the Facebook page. So yeah, go ahead and comment.
Hell yeah.
But Brutus Beefcake, who would you compare him to in today's guys?
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here. Like, you wouldn't... I definitely wouldn't say...
Curtis Axel?
No, because Curtis Axel, never was over.
Drew Hawkins?
Drew Hawkins. You mean, is that a combination of Drew McIntyre and Kurt Hawkins?
Kurt Hawkins, that's his name.
Maybe Zack Ryder? Would you say Zack Ryder? Because Zack Ryder's
yeah,
had... Okay. Zack Ryder, here's the thing, Zack Ryder's had many a title run.
Yeah, but like I said, though, today, title runs aren't like... They're not a big deal anymore.
Well, because the thing is, anybody can have them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
Zack Ryder's a very good way to... Even Mojo Rawley might even... Because
Mojo's too new, though.
Yeah, he's too new. We don't know.
Definitely, I'm talking.
It definitely looks like the big push he's gotten has definitely fallen off.
He might still get another one. I think they just, you know, they went their way with Jinder Mahal, and then, you know, this past week on SmackDown, they actually did remember him.
Oh, okay. I haven't watched
because Jinder came out and or not Jinder, Mojo came out and was like, hey, I eliminated Jinder from the Battle Royal, you know, the pre-show Battle Royal. So how come like I'm not in the mix anymore? And Shane McMahon was like, well, you know what? Why don't you wrestle Jinder Mahal in a non-title match? And if you win, you get a title shot. And then he lost.
Oh.
So, but he still, but nonetheless, they still brought him up. Actually, I guess we're talking about current stuff. You know, a team that's fell off that nobody quite understands why, and I would actually like to know why, is American Alpha.
Yeah.
American Alpha kind of, they brought them up, put the titles on them for like a minute, had the Usos beat them, and now they've barely been around.
Yeah, I think it's because the Usos. I love the new Usos. The
Usos are great. Usos are great.
And I think they're just like, oh, we got lightning in a bottle with the Usos, and American Alpha just kind of fell by the wayside.
Well, Usos are great. You got Brazongo is great. They're really funny. New Day is back.
Yeah.
You know, so you have those three teams that can really be the standard bearers of the competition and on SmackDown, you know, because you have all the other teams that nobody really takes it seriously, you know, so yeah, we'll see.
So we got point counterpoint. Speaking of tag teams, this is one of the greatest tag teams of all time. We got the team of Arn and Tully.
Yeah.
They're just on their way to the WWF, and they're at point. They're going to be successful. Counterpoint, they won't be successful. And
so Gersh Kunzman.
Yeah,
that's not a real name, is it?
I think so.
Gersh Kunzman.
That's a name if I've ever heard one.
That is a name.
That's a name you can.
That's a name you can
write on a check. Gersh Kunzman.
That's a name you can put on an agency.
Yeah,
and you, like a talent agency, and be like, Gersh Kunzman will rep you.
Yeah,
make you a star.
Because the other guy, Bob Smith, the counterpoint, that's a pretty boring name.
Yeah.
It's no Gersh Kunzman.
So Gersh rightfully has the right point, because he's like, yeah, they're going to be great because it's their Arn and Tully.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, they are so much better than all the teams that are already there, including the Powers of Pain. You know, so why would they not be great?
Yeah.
And Bob Smith is like, well, they're not going to be great because they're going to be stuck behind all these teams in the promotion, you know, and they're not going to get title shots, and they're just going to wrestle prelim matches and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you know, and they also have this thing that PWA always does. It's like they also never will probably mention their NWA work because they did the same thing in the Harley Race. And, you know, and it's like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, really, I mean, unless if you're going to make some money off of it, there's no point to bring it up, which is why they did it with Flair, you know, and not Harley Race or Arn Anderson.
That's what I liked about back in the day, where they just did not acknowledge the other promotions, and that was great.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like it being separate worlds.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good way of saying it. Separate worlds. Like, yeah.
Well, that's the thing, because back then, too, like, NWA and WWF and really anything else that...
Yeah.
Anything else that existed, like your Memphis stuff or whatever, it all felt like different worlds.
Yeah.
It all felt very distinct.
Yeah, as a comic book fan, it's like DC and Marvel, just separate worlds. Mm-hmm. Like, they just didn't intertwine and like, yeah, so... And that's pretty awesome.
And now everything's the fucking same.
Yeah.
You know, now it's all blends together.
And although... Like, they don't acknowledge any of the guys who were in TNA. They don't acknowledge any of TNA stuff.
No.
So it's kind of the same way nowadays.
But the overall, I guess, presentation and just the style and everything does not feel like it's... I mean, WWF does feel just professional, because TNA, you know, you can always make the case that you're watching guys, you're some of the guys that are on that roster that are not as good. Like they never had the as big of a shot, you know, that, you know, that, and even though they might be good for TNA, you know, who's to say that they would be good on WWE? You know, I mean, that's what we're trying to figure out with some of these guys that they bring in. So anyways.
Well, Gersh was right. Demolition had a stranglehold on those titles, and Arn and Tully took the titles.
That's right, they did.
So Gersh was correct.
Eat it, Bob Smith.
Bob Smith, you don't know what you're talking about.
Fuck no.
And if it wasn't for Tully Blanchard specifically failing a drug test so he can get out of his contract, they would probably still be champions to this day.
In 2017, they would
have never, for 30 years, they would have been tag team champions.
Oh, that would
they
be
would awesome. Have never went to WCW. They would just be winning. They would have fought the Smoking Guns. They would have fought the Headbangers.
They would have fought the Men on a Mission.
Men on a Mission. Everybody. Everyone you throw at them, they would have beat them all.
They would have fought the Truth Commission.
Yes.
They would have fought
everybody.
DOA.
Yeah.
Let's say they would have fought
Billy and Chuck.
Billy and Chuck. 3 minute warning. That's a fantasy booking. 3 minute warning versus Tully and Arn.
Every team that went from in WWE from like 1990 till today.
That's right. To today. Even American Alpha and the Ascension.
The Ascension.
They could definitely beat the Ascension.
No, that's the team that'll stop them. The Ascension. If I'm booking it my way, the Ascension is the team that ends it.
My God, it's been 30 years, but the Ascension has finally done it. Connor and Victor have defeated Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard.
Tully can finally fail that drug test.
He's like, finally, I can do coke. Nobody will stop me now. So here's their interview segment.
Ivan Koloff getting interviewed.
Ivan Koloff just turned face.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
That is weird. Because he turned face in the way that, and I don't even really know how this all folded, came together, and I'll probably have to actually watch the NWA weekly show leading up to this, because basically, you know, for the longest time, he was, you know, under Paul Jones's army, you know, Paul Jones's army, and at some point they got into a feud with the Rock and Roll Express, and there was a match at a Clash of the Champions where it was a Russian chain match or a strap match of some sort that you had to touch all four corners, and it was between Ricky Morton and Ivan Koloff, and the way it ends is that Ivan Koloff has Paul Jones's riding crop, but Paul Jones accidentally lets it go, and Ricky Morton wins. And then Paul Jones is like, "You screwed up," and he's like, "No, you screwed up." You know, Ivan Koloff's like, "No, you screwed up, Paul Jones," and he hits him. And then, you know, the Russian assassins show up, and, you know, it's a big fart fest. So, yeah, but I mean, Ivan Koloff being a face is kind of weird.
He's a face, and he still has the Russian flag on his trunks.
We still got the Russian flag, and he's definitely not baby face anything ever, nor has he ever been. You know, he's always looked like Ivan Koloff.
Even dead, I hate him.
That's right. R.I.P. Ivan Koloff.
Yeah, he was at one of our jinxes.
That's right, he was.
Yeah.
So we just get to, you know, him about like, will you team with Nikita again? Blah blah blah. And it's like, whatever. Nobody cares. I really don't. I don't care.
I didn't care. I couldn't care less. Yeah.
Sports Review Election Day Spectacular. What 10 wrestlers would do if they were president.
Yeah.
So basically, our boy Gersh Kuntzman.
Oh, Gersh, back at it. Yeah.
I am not as familiar with the writings of Gersh Kuntzman in the PWI Victory Sports Series. I am not as familiar with his work. I feel like he wasn't around for maybe that long. But here he is doing...
He probably used, like, the wrestling magazines to, like, you know, get himself...
Well, that's what Peter King did.
Yeah, to get himself into Sports Illustrated or something like that.
And I think there was another girl, Kostya Kennedy.
Yeah.
She went on to write for, like, SI and stuff like that. And she remember her writing for PWI at one point.
But he probably never got to Sports Illustrated. He probably got to, like, some other...
The Sporting News?
Yeah, something like that. Or, like, maybe some Canadian magazine, and he covered curling, and we never heard from him again.
Curling Weekly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Gersh.
Or maybe he loves curling. Who knows? And it's his dream job.
You know, this was just a stepping stone.
Yeah.
Literally, stepping stone to... A rolling stone, a throwing stone.
Yeah, or maybe he's working for Rolling Stone.
Nice.
Yeah, or Hit Parader.
Hit Parader or Circus.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not going to read all these, but basically You have Ric Flair.
Ric Flair telling poor people to get a job.
Yeah, basically he's Trump.
Yeah.
He's basically telling people to get a job, and that he, what's something about here, that there is every indication that a Flair administration would continue Reagan's legacy of defensive military intervention, because they kind of use the example of Reagan's invasion of Grenada.
Yeah. A Flair would have been all about Grenada.
What would you call about Grenada for? Actually, I'm trying to think. What is in Grenada?
I don't know. It was just an excuse to, like, you know, get Halliburton some money.
Oh, okay.
Probably.
Yeah. Flair making those dollars. He could use them now, too.
Yeah, he sure could.
Did you see Ric Flair's finger online recently? He fucked up his pinky real bad.
He and the Miz were at the basketball game yesterday.
They were, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they were.
R.I.P. Cleveland Cavaliers.
Did they lose?
Yeah. So they're down 3-0 as of time we're writing this, and they'll probably have been swept by the time you hear this. So R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Defend the land. That's not something they're doing. But, like, what's going on with Golden State is nothing short of phenomenal. They've been undefeated in the playoffs. They've swept everybody. But, you know, whatever. I don't fucking care. I hate Kevin Durant. I hate Golden State. I only like Golden State when they're playing against the Clippers. That's the only time I cheer for Golden State.
I don't follow basketball. The only time, last time I remember Golden State was good was when Chris Mullin was playing.
Oh, Chris Mullin and Tim Hardaway.
Was it Hardaway? That's right.
Yeah.
It was a Hardaway?
Yeah. The killer crossover.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So Jerry Lawler.
He flip-flops.
Yeah, he's a flip-flopper. He's a
flip-flopper. So nothing would get done, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, and like they don't want people calling themselves the king and as president. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's unconstitutional.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, they kind of compare him to like JFK. Like prior to the 60s, the president was only heard on the radio. But yeah, that's kind of how they compare him.
And Hogan, in an effort to make America fit again, would sponsor legislation making it mandatory to pass the presidential fitness test.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what? I'm all for that.
They had the presidential fitness test in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you had to do some stuff in gym class. I remember seeing it on an episode of The Goldbergs. I don't remember actually having to do it, but
did I ever do it? Probably not. I just did the, when I was in grade school, I just did the parachute.
The parachute, yes. I loved
the parachute. And you did the ones where you did did you ever do like in your gym classes when you were in like in grade school where you would do things where it would be like a themed game, and you would do something where you would all line up, like boys or whatever, and girls, like they would line up in different sets of lines or whatever, and you would run down to the end of the hall or end of the gym back. But maybe you might have like a theme, like where you might be, we called it Jaws, where you would run out, you know, you would go. And you might be, you know, and the gym teacher would be like, oh, there's Timmy the tuna, and there's Jerry the jellyfish, and there's Sean the shark, or Sean the sea anemone, and then here comes Jaws, and Jaws would just, whoever was Jaws would chase everybody around.
I never heard of that. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
That's what I did.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
so we definitely had the parachute.
There was no.
For those of you who didn't have a parachute in gym class, it is exactly what it is. It's a giant parachute that the school acquired somehow, and you just lay it on the floor, and everyone grabs a piece of the parachute, and you either crawl under it or you lift it up into a big ball, and like that's it. That's all you do with the parachute.
One parachute, please, for my class.
Yeah.
Please send that over. Please make sure it fits 30 children underneath it.
Everyone gets under the parachute, and that's all you did with it. You didn't do anything with it.
You can also, if you all grabbed it,
yeah,
and you all kind wave of like it, waved it like you're making a bet or some shit.
Yeah, but like that's it. You didn't really, it had no purpose.
So President Sting would basically become, I would say, Captain Planet here.
Yeah.
Because he's like makes the National Park Service.
Yeah.
You know, he puts that into the forefront, and he would, you know, just ban all commercial activities on the coastline and everything. So,
Sting would be a pretty good president.
He would be a good president. Yeah. I'd vote for Sting.
I wouldn't vote for the Rougeau brothers.
No, they're not, definitely not the Rougeau brothers.
Yeah.
Because, well, first of all, they wouldn't be able to run because they're not American.
No.
And basically, they would try to do a tag team presidency. It would just probably not work. And I definitely would not vote for Colonel DeBeers.
Colonel DeBeers is also, he's a candidate, I guess.
He technically could run.
Yeah, because he's not really South African.
No.
That's just his gimmick.
But this is what they're like. Well, basically, he would like condone the activities of the KKK and the John Birch Society, and he would literally involve ending federally financed programs for inner city blacks and Hispanics, and it would just be to quote, bring America to a period of racially motivated violence not seen since the Civil War. So it's pretty depressing. Colonel DeBeers.
Yes, I don't want to live in that world either.
No, he probably also put Scott Hall in jail for taking steroids.
Yeah. He would just like go into his bank account and take the $10,000.
He'd take it back.
He'd be like, you know what? You might have beat me, but in the end, I win. I'm the president. I'm taking the money.
You know how this would, you know, Scott Hall would get it back? Presidency on a poll match.
Yeah.
Where you have to grab a bag and it's like a trophy that tells you you're the president.
Can you imagine, like, Scott Hall goes to the bank after Colonel DeBeers takes the money, and he's like, where's my money? And they're just like, the president took it.
Hey, Chico.
And he's just like, DeBeers.
And then he has to give, since he has a zero balance, he has to put his chains in, because now he's remote.
As collateral. Yeah, he's like, here's my chains. And then you got Ted DiBiase, Kerry Von Erich, Jim Duggan, Jim Cornette. The list goes on.
Jim Cornette's one is basically he would expand the borders.
Oh, okay.
First into the U.S., first into Canada, and then into South America.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of taking over Mexico. That's something I'm in. Well, think about it. If you want to build a wall, take over Mexico first and then build the wall at the Mexican-Guatemalan border, because that's a much smaller border. It's less you got to spend on a wall.
Yeah.
I think it's economically better to just take over Mexico.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it for that. Andre the Giant turning good again.
Yeah, good again, Andre the Giant.
I like that's how back in the day, though.
You're good. Bad guys.
You would be watching wrestling, mm-hmm. and my dad would be like, what happened on wrestling? It's, so-and-so turned bad or so-and-so turned good. And that's how you
refer to it. Some magazines refer to it as fan favorites and rule breakers, but this magazine's referring to it as good.
This one in particular. Usually PWI does refer to it as fan favorites or rule breakers.
But, yeah.
And basically it just kind of goes through this whole thing about how Andre was he's probably going to turn face. They're thinking he's going to turn face because his match at SummerSlam, you know, he's just getting, I think they're trying to imply that he's frustrated with being a heel.
Yeah.
Because at the match of SummerSlam, the finish involves, what's her face?
Elizabeth
taking off her skirt, showing off her legs. And like DiBiase's like, oi, you know, and Andre's like, I got to maybe go back and watch the tape, but he's like, hey, wrestle, come on. You know, what the hell? Why are you checking this chick out? And then, you know, that lead, you know, of course leads to, you know, the Super Mega Powers winning.
Yeah.
So, and they're basically saying, like, well, he's gonna become a face because of that.
But didn't the Mega Powers win because Hulk Hogan took Jesse Ventura's hand and made him count?
He did force down that last.
So I think Andre's got a bigger legit beef with that than anything.
He has. We should have legit beef with the rules.
Yeah.
We should go back and contest that. His estate needs to contest that win and turn it back over. So
His daughter, she showed up backstage at SmackDown recently.
That's right. She's been hanging out.
Yeah,
she's probably back campaigning for that to get changed.
Yeah, probably. That's what I think. That's probably her.
Why else would she be there? Why else would Andre the Giant's daughter be there?
Yeah.
So Samoans will annihilate traitors.
SWAT. And I completely forgot that Buddy Roberts was their manager.
He was,
And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's basically dressed like Island Buddy Roberts.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. That's pretty great. And you have Fatu and Samu.
Yeah.
Samu. A positively svelte Fatu.
Yeah, he's not the Rikishi-esque that he becomes. No,
he's Samoan-sized, but he is not Rikishi-sized. Yeah, no, but, you know, basically the conceit is that Buddy Roberts is obsessed with making Michael Hayes' life a living hell.
I don't blame him after the way they tossed him out of the Freebirds. So.
Did they? So how'd that actually happen? I think it just stopped.
No, they kicked him out. There was an angle.
Wait, so
was they talk it, about a little bit in this article.
Really? Yeah, okay. Because I felt like at one point, because basically the way that I saw what happened to the Freebirds was, okay, so there was one point in 87 where maybe it was Buddy. Yeah, that was Buddy. Yeah, it was Buddy, Terry, and Michael were wrestled a squash on NWA television. And then Michael went away. You know, then the other guys went away. And then Michael showed back up in WCW and he was just wrestling, you know, squashes. And then he started teaming with Jimmy. And then they just kind of...
Yeah, no, there's an angle. They talk a little bit about it in here, so I'm going to have to go back and watch it, too, because...
Yeah, because I know that they've split up in the past, but, yeah. I mean, this pretty much was it for, like, the core group.
Yeah, that was it. Never forget Freebirds.
Yeah.
Never forget Buddy Roberts and Terry Gordy.
Yeah.
They're done. Rest in peace.
The Road Warriors. Actually, so I think this is... from the same shoot here, this picture here, the Road Warriors can the Horsemen survive their wrath? And basically, this is just they cut out Paul Ellering and just, you know, they're just facing a different direction.
Yeah, now they took the chair away. And
no, the chair's still there.
He's still sitting there.
Yeah. And then they just turn slightly to the right.
Yeah.
And just was like, arr! So. And basically this is about the Horsemen and the Road Warriors, because Road Warriors were, you know, whooping Tully and Arn's ass, and, you know, they wonder if, you know, if that's still going to be a thing.
Well, it's not, because the Tully and Arn left. So it's kind of funny, because they're talking about Tully and Arn going to WWF earlier in this magazine, and now they're talking about the Horsemen.
Because there's this paragraph here where it's like, Paul Ellering's like, Tully and Arn have been avoiding my Legion of Doom for months, and it doesn't mention anything about the fact, it's like, well, they just left. So.
Yeah, they just left.
So now they don't have to worry about it.
Yes, this article's outdated already.
The hell, PWI.
Yeah. Then the collapse of Jimmy Hart's empire.
Yeah. Collapse of Jimmy Hart's empire. So we're talking 88.
Yeah.
We're talking summer of 88. So who do you have in summer of 88? You had... So I don't think you had the Harts.
Yeah, anymore. I think they had just... Yeah, but prior to this, they were the champs, and he was their manager.
Well, they were the champs up until late 87.
Yeah.
And then they talk about how they got beat by Strikeforce. And then just at the time of this article, you know, Honky Tonk just lost the title.
Yeah.
What's to become of this, you know? So, you know, so basically he has the Rougeaus, I think, at this time. He's got Honky.
He's got the Hammer.
Does he have Dino Bravo?
No, that's Frenchie Martin is at this time.
Frenchie, okay. So I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's all he's got. Yeah. And, you know, Jimmy's breaking it down. So here, I'll let you talk about this referee thing here.
Okay. It's not easy as it looks. So they have the Sports Review wrestling assistant editor, Bob Smith.
Bob Smith, who didn't think that Tully and Arn would succeed.
Yeah. So he decided he's going to be a referee. And this section of the magazine was supposed to be filled with an article titled, "Let's Get Rid of Those Lousy Referees. Fed up with all the rules and fractions I've been seeing in recent weeks, I've decided to publish the most scathing piece I'd written since joining the staff." And then Bill Apter caught a glimpse of it, and he was shocked. And it's like, you know what? Go be a referee if you think it's so easy. So that's what happened. So then Bob Smith decided he's going to be a referee. And then, so he's talking, there's photos of him talking with, who's he talking to?
Some guy named Mark Tendler, who used to be a wrestler.
Yeah. So he's a referee for a match with Kevin Sullivan taking on somebody. Oh, and
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's not Kevin Sullivan.
It's not?
It's Preston Steele.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if he was wrestling a match for Kevin Sullivan, he probably wouldn't be writing this article.
Yeah,
it would be dead.
And he had to he's watching for illegal holds, and yeah, it's just all just photos of him being a referee. And
just a lot of him being like, well, you know,
he's not only like he's not wearing a referee outfit; he's wearing jeans and that Pro Wrestling Illustrated T-shirt that we talked about a few weeks ago, which is what makes it great.
Yeah,
like if you're gonna do that, if you're gonna be a special guest referee,
he does have. You know, I was gonna say he does take some good pictures in here.
Yeah,
because he's doing a lot of like the referee mannerisms.
Yeah,
you know
this photo, he's pointing at the Cheetah Kid.
Well, I like this one here. If you go back to the first page here, and he's kind of like the Preston Steele is choking some dude. dude, and he's just kind of like, "Sah!" You know, just, it's actually really, he's actually got that down.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's almost as if, like, I mean, obviously, yeah, it was staged and everything. But
Preston Steele and Carmine Albano.
That is Lou Albano's son.
Yeah.
He remember, we've referenced him before.
Yeah. So there he is. He's,
He is referring a match here with the Cheetah Kid.
Yeah.
Cheetah Kid, who I believe, no, maybe, okay, I'm can't remember if this is Rocco Rock or not. Ted Petty. Yeah. I don't know if he was Zebra Kid or whatever, but he's fighting this dude who looks like a black Elvis known as Commando.
Oh.
Which okay. I kind of, because he's on his back and he has like.
So it must have been one of those indie shows where they had one ref for the whole card, and it looks like Bob Smith refed every match.
Yeah, that's a way to get an article out of that, I guess.
Let's see. So at the end, he's just like, "Let them argue over these monsters. Give me the safety of my desk and computer terminal." Apter had a right to laugh.
Give me my Tandy.
Yeah. Apter had a right to laugh. Being a referee may be the hardest job in sports. It certainly was too much for me. So in the end, he learned his lesson.
Hey, being a ref, from what I understand, is legitimately not as easy as one might think it would be.
Especially on TV. Like, you got to make sure you're, like, in a proper spot, yet not in the view of the camera where you're blocking the views.
And you're also able to take orders on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, in the ring and through the headset.
Yeah, and you have to know the finish because some wrestlers are a little lazier than others as far as getting their shoulders up and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know everything.
Yeah. So I know you got it.
You also have to be aware of, like, if a wrestler's hurt, like, and he needs, like, you need to stall. Like, everything. Like, there's so much into it. Yeah. It's not an easy job. Bob Smith should have known that.
Bob Schiff. Yeah. He should have known. I do like this one letter. Now we get the rest of the stuff for the after part. You know, we do get another letter in the mailbag called Beware. B-E-E. Where?
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell that's about.
It's about the killer bees.
Well, I know, but like, what's the point?
They gotta beware.
Yeah, we gotta beware. And also, here's a letter here about how the WWE did not acknowledge Adrian Adonis's passing in a car accident.
Cheryl Robertson of St. Anne, Missouri is really upset about it.
She is upset. She is not happy.
She talks about how she drove hundreds of miles to wrestling matches just to watch Adrian Adonis. And I have to question her, like, who she chooses to be a fan of, if that's the case. I liked Adrian Adonis, but I'm not traveling 100 miles just to see him.
Adrian, well, because she said, okay, WWF first came to my area in December 1983. She lives in St. Anne, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Prior to this, I had to drive hundreds of miles to see Mr. Adonis. Adrian was what brought me to the WWF matches and kept me coming. So she was really, that's the thing. Yeah. So she means she was really into the whole flower shop and stuff. And
no, I think she talks about how she didn't like the flower shop. Either way, if that's not the case.
After Adrian turned himself into a clown in the WWF circus, they deserted him.
Yeah.
Now they can't hurt him anymore, but they're hurting his fans who know the truth.
See?
He was really good, though. He was really good. For a guy that was his size, too, like, he bumped like a motherfucker.
Yeah, but he was his size because he let himself go.
So let me tell you that. So was she watching the AWA, too?
She must have been.
She had to have been. I hope she was. I hope she got her fix.
Need that Adrian Adonis fix.
Yeah, I know.
You think, like, she's just an old lady, like, watching old Adrian Adonis tapes, like, every day?
That maybe.
That's probably all she's doing is, like, she's like, I can't wait to be with you, Ade. And she just keeps watching.
Adrian!
She's like, I can't wait to go to that big card in the sky.
Big card. Can't wait to go to the big flower shop in the sky. She gets up there and it's smashed because Roddy Piper showed up. He smashed it. She gets up there and he's just getting, Adrian's just getting put to sleep.
Yeah.
Put to heaven's sleep by Roddy Piper, because that's what he's doing, is just throwing people in sleeper holds. So we got all the other stuff from the other. From the other articles. So I guess we'll just jump right to the.
The ratings.
Yeah, let's talk about the ratings here.
Best part of the magazine.
I love the ratings. This is the thing here, actually, where Terry Taylor just entered the WWF.
Oh, okay.
And he's being managed by Bobby Heenan, which you would think would have actually been a really good deal, but they just didn't have it for him, which was kind of a bummer. I don't know. I've seen some Terry Taylor stuff. Like, I watched some of the Andrew Bay stuff that he's done. you know, the '80s, from like the '80s and all that, from around that era. He's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's pretty good. So yeah, tagged. Okay, so top 10 ratings here. Got our ratings here.
Interesting enough, in the top 10 overall.
Oh, okay.
They got Randy Savage over Ric Flair. They never usually have the WWF champion over the NWA champion, but in this magazine, in this particular issue, they do.
I think it's because they like Savage.
Yeah.
I think it's because they're just glad it's not Hogan, so they didn't put So then Hogan's not number one, but yeah. So
Hogan's like number nine.
Yeah, it's Savage, Flair, Lawler, because Lawler's the NWA champ, Luger, DiBiase, Sting. U.S. champ Barry Windham, world-class champ Kerry Von Erich, Hogan, and then Warrior, the IC champ. Yeah, that actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Your tag teams are, you know, I like reading through these here. Tag teams, number one, Midnight Express, you got Demolition, Road Warriors, Powers of Pain, Fantastics, Bad Company, British Bulldogs, Hart Foundation, Rougeau's, and then at the very bottom, you have the Continental Tag Team Champions, Shane Douglas and Humongous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then you have, you know, your ratings. I don't usually like reading the popular stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have your, this is also interesting, too, because this is back when a lot of the stuff, a lot of the promotions, like the regional promotions, didn't, you know, when I would, because I would read some of these from, like, 85 or 86 or whatever, up to that point, and a lot of, like, different promotions would have, like, their guys show up in the overall NWA ratings, but since the NWA is kind of basically WCW on its own, and a lot of these promotions don't follow through with, you know, the NWA, they're not in, you know, it's just, it's standalone stuff, and everybody else is, you know, on their own. Nothing really interesting here in the AWA or NWA, or actually NWA and WWF stuff. The only thing I want to point out here is that they, and this is at any mistake, Ted DiBiase is from Omaha, Nebraska, but they represent Nebraska as NB.
Yeah.
Instead of NE. Nebraska, NB, I think actually represents New Brunswick.
Yeah.
So he is Canada. He is Canadian now.
Yeah.
Let's see, Jerry Lawler, AWA champion, Soldats Ustinov. Is number three, our Jerry Lawler spitting buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have your world class. Stampede actually has a rare appearance here from Steve Blackman.
Oh, okay.
Steve Blackman, who started out in, he started out in Stampede and then got picked up at the WWF in 89.
Yeah.
Got malaria and didn't get better until 1998.
Yeah.
Or 97 or whenever he came back.
Yeah. And then you got Goldie Rogers in at number 10.
Goldie Rogers, that's right. Yeah. He was the pre Rip Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it. CWA Continental, Phil Hickerson. No wonder he's in that.
He's the champ.
He's the champ. Brickhouse Brown, yeah, they're all, we all, I think he must be the Alabama champion. Scott Steiner cutting his teeth in Continental. You know, you got your Jimmy Valiant and your...
Oh, Billy Travis in at number 10.
R.I.P. Billy Travis. Oh, no, I'm sorry. CWA, so this is Memphis.
Yeah.
So Phil Hecker said, okay, so this makes sense.
You got Jeff Jarrett. You got Jimmy Valiant. Buddy Landell and Billy Travis. R.I.P. to both of them.
And then you go to Continental.
The title is vacant.
And the title is vacant.
Yeah.
And you have a rare appearance of Willie B. Hurt, a.k.a. Shaska Watley, a.k.a. Pez Watley.
Yeah.
You know, in his alternate persona.
Mm-hmm.
And then World Wrestling Council.
Yeah, Tony Anthony of Buck Snort, Tennessee.
Yeah, I always loved that. Also, 235, really?
Must have been trim back in the 80s.
Yeah, he must have been really, I mean, I always felt he was, maybe he was really short.
Probably like 335 in his WWF run.
Yeah, when he was the plumber.
Yeah, T.L. Hopper.
T.L. Hopper. And then, yeah, World Wrestling Council, you got your folks here. And Kamala double dipping because he's also number four in world class and he's number eight.
Good for you, Kamala.
Because he also managed to make his way into the most hated.
Yeah.
In number 10. So he's around the country,
that Kamala. You got Dutch Mantel and Danny Spivey in Puerto Rico at this time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and you got Buddy Landell double dipping. He's in Puerto Rico as well.
Yeah.
He's the CWA. And Ricky Santana's over there.
Ricky Santana was always there.
Yeah.
TNT was always there. Savio Vega, you know, your Miguel Perez, like those guys are always there. And so actually, if I was reading, because it says so in the ratings analysis, that the title is vacant.
Yeah.
Because Hercules Aliala, whatever, he won the title, but he hit Carlos Colon's wife at a World Wrestling Council awards dinner.
Oh.
So that got him...
That shouldn't get you stripped of the title, in my opinion.
No, that...
That should just make Carlos Colon want to take the title from you.
Yeah, that should be part of an angle, but no, yeah. They just stripped him, and then they're just probably give it to Carlos Colon.
Yeah.
So... We have another, I don't know if you saw this, it's another one of the custom top tens.
Yeah?
Sent in by the fans.
Oh, okay. What's this one?
Okay, so let's see. Okay, here's the 10 most likely main events at WrestleMania 5.
Oh, okay.
Roger Ebert v. Gene Siskel.
No.
Tammy Baker v. Jessica Hahn.
No.
Brady Bunch v. the Partridge Family.
Come on, that's been done.
Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck versus Mighty Mouse and Daffy Duck.
That would have been a cool match.
And that also, for some reason, crosses many different copyrights.
Yeah. Only in the universe of Who Framed Roger Rabbit can that take place.
Yes. Yes, it can. Lassie versus Rin Tin Tin and a dog collar chain match. That just sounds cruel.
Yeah.
Sean Penn versus reporters, which... Actually, if that was the main event at WrestleMania 5, it was just Sean Penn beating up a bunch of reporters and like cameramen.
I would have bought. It would have sold more than the actual main event.
It would have. They probably could have sold out, you know, an actual arena instead of Trump Tower.
Yeah,
or whatever it is. Garfield versus Heathcliff.
Oh man, you know what? I got to go with Heathcliff in this one because Garfield's just too lazy.
Yeah, Heathcliff lives on the streets.
Yeah,
he doesn't fuck around. Three Stooges versus the Four Horsemen. Well, already right there, I mean, Four Horsemen are going to win. Because,
yeah, but don't count the Stooges out.
Yeah, Mo would go fucking wild.
He would go for the eyes.
Yeah. Honky Tonk Man versus Elvis, if either is alive. So wait, were they expecting Honky to die?
I guess so.
And then, of course, George Bush versus Michael Dukakis.
Mm. That's the match I wanted to see.
Yeah. What else we got here? 10 stupidest things in the WWF.
Okay.
Number one, Brother Love.
Okay.
Number two, the Mega Powers.
Okay.
Number three, the Mega Powers handshake.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I liked that handshake.
I know. You'd think you would just lump it in together, but yeah. I guess you hate their handshake and them equally.
No, I think they separately. Hate the handshake more less than them because it's three and they are two.
Mm.
Yeah, but I liked the handshake.
Yeah. I remember one time at the end of Raw, one time, John Cena brought it back with Zack Ryder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Number four, George Animal Steel. Five, Honky Tonk Man. Six, Big Boss Man. Seven, Coco Beware. Eight, Million Dollar Man. Nine, Brutus Beefcake. And 10, Bad News Brown.
So he's just naming wrestlers he doesn't like. That's just dumb.
Gary Kosnoff. True NWA fan. So
I guess so. How do you hate Bad News Brown?
I know. Bad News Brown is awesome.
Yeah.
How do you hate Teddy Biasi? You can't hate Teddy Biasi.
Or Coco Beware for that matter.
Yeah, these are all good things.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I am pretty much opposed to all of you, all of these things.
Yeah, Brother Love was even great.
Yeah, these are all things great. What the hell? You don't know anything, Gary Kosnoff.
Yeah, why did we even read your list? We shouldn't have put you over.
Top 10 painted faces in wrestling.
Let me guess. Like, so you got Sting, and then you got like Hawk and Animal?
Well, Road Warrior, Animal goes first.
Okay.
Then Sting, then Hawk, then Warrior, then Kamala, Warlord, Barbarian, Smash, Kendo Nagasaki. Shout out to Kendo Nagasaki. I'm into that. And Axe.
Okay.
And then also the same person, Lori LeMaster from Bellevue, Ohio, also added wrestling's top 10 snobs. Kurt Hennig, Ric Flair, Missy Hyatt, Tully Blanchard, Diamond Dahl. See, that's I don't know if that's appropriate because she didn't even talk.
Yeah, that's why she was so snobby.
Oh, okay. Rick Rude, number seven, Ted DiBiase, number eight, Adrian Street, number nine, Debbie Combs, and number 10, Dino Bravo. And the last but not least list here of these custom lists is from Michael Yates of Rochester, New York.
Oh, okay. Michael Yates.
He gives us the top 10 worst finishing maneuvers.
Let's hear it.
All right. Number one, the Rude Awakening.
Okay. No.
This is a very upsetting list, actually. Number two, the pile driver, Don Morocco. It's a fucking tombstone before the tombstone. He didn't even do it like the tombstone. He kind of used to hold the guy on the side and drop down with it. That was sick. Number three, the Barry Windham's Claw.
This guy's an idiot.
Number four, the Russian Sickle.
This guy's a real idiot.
Five, the Demolition Drop.
What?
That's not even the proper name.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the Demolition Drop is. I know the Demolition Decapitation.
Yeah.
Number six, Le Bombe de Rougeau. Okay. I can see being like, well, that's kind of dumb because basically it's just Jacques Rougeau jumping crotch first in your face.
Yeah, that is kind of dumb.
Flying Forearm Smash, Tito Santana.
It's a great move.
It's a great move and has done very well for Tito.
And didn't they call it the Flying Burrito in AWF?
Probably.
I think they did refer to it as the Flying
Burrito. And the WWF, wasn't it called the Flying Jalapeno? Did it have a name?
No, it was the Flying... I think they just called it the Flying Forearm. And then when he was in the AWF, they referred to it as the Flying Burrito.
I think that's what they also referred to one of Manny Fernandez's strikes in the NWA. It was the Burrito. Flying Burrito. Number eight, the Bulldog from Sam Houston. Well, Sam Houston, I mean, come on. He could barely, I mean, he's so skinny, mm-hmm. You can't imagine the Bulldog would do that much damage. Number nine, the Slingshot Suplex, Tully Blanchard. Horseshit.
Fuck you.
And number 10, the Camel Clutch from the Iron Sheik.
Fuck you.
That humbled Brian Blair. Broke his back, fuck his ass.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude, you don't know anything.
He doesn't.
So
he sure doesn't. I can't get over this photo.
No, we got to you should take a picture of that, actually.
Yeah.
You have to put that up there. I like that a lot. But that's it for this week's show, and that's it for the book, Sports Review Wrestling, December 1988. This is a very brown book.
The brownest of the books I think we've ever covered.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Facebook.
Mine's Facebook. Find us on Facebook. I Could Talk Kayfabe. Twitter, @ Gersh Kuntzman. No, that's... @ Sweatpants Joe on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm gonna change my handle to @ Gersh Kuntzman. You know, see if I can get some traction that way. But you can find me @ Angry Hero Sean, SHAWN. Also, of course, my other podcast, Worst Collection Ever, on iTunes, or I'm sorry, Apple Podcasts, where you can also find this podcast. And if you haven't already, however you found us, but if you haven't found us, you know, if you found us and you like us, please subscribe. Please leave us a rating.
Rating of 5 stars.
5 stars if you think we deserve it.
iTunes, Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
That's like the that's the way to get the podcast growing.
That's how it is. If 100 people listen to this, and if every 100 of those people all rate the show like at once within like the next couple
days. Organize amongst yourselves. Go on the Facebook page and put a comment and say, let's do this. And then everyone do it together. That would be great.
Yeah, that would be great. So that's it, folks. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next time. Okay.